Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Dawn Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Two people are shot to death in a deadly love triangle. A super jumbo jet clips a plane at JFK Airport, and Japan's nuclear disaster is officially on par with Chernobyl.
It's not just jumbo, it's super jumbo.
It's a super jumbo.
Okay.
The world's largest passenger aircraft, Rick Emerson.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, prepare yourselves, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Tuesday, April 12th, 2011. Police say fingerprints helped lead to the arrest of a man accused of looting laundry machines in southeast Portland. Chester Lee James, 32, was arrested last week by Portland police on suspicion of stealing money from at least three machines at different apartments.
Chester Lee James! You leave my end of things alone!
And for violating his parole.
Okay. That's hard to believe.
James is accused of prying open the machines, stealing the money, and causing enough damage that the machines had to be replaced.
Chester Lee James! You quit being such an idiot! You steal something of value!
James was arraigned Monday in Multnomah County.
How much money could you possibly get out of a machine like that? $10, $15 the most? I mean... Jesus. You'd be better off just vandalizing the machines and then posing as the guy who comes to fix them.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it costs more to fix the thing than you're ever going to get out of it. That's just stupid.
James told detectives he had never been to any of the three locations.
Uh-huh.
But some neighbors say they've seen him around, and he's stolen from their machines more than once.
Everybody in this story is stupid.
A neighbor who reported one of the break-ins said, "The dryer was thrown on the ground and the whole mechanism taken out and pried apart."
The dryer was not thrown on the ground. That's just wrong. The dryer is huge.
He continued, "We couldn't use the dryer or anything like that. It happened like three or four times."
We done paid no never mind, no how. All right. Did he say that he'd never been anywhere near this, near the proximity of this vicinity?
He never eyeballed it visually with his own eyes.
I done laid out for different parts. Jesus Christ. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Hello, it is Tuesday, April 12th, 2011. Coming up later on this hour, you got your entertainment news, also Science on the March. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or legionofnews.com. And next hour, the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy can be yours at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Dawn Taylor.
NASA has announced the final destinations for the nation's space shuttles after the program comes to an end this summer. And guess what? Evergreen Aviation Museum? Not on the list.
Fail.
Space Shuttle Atlantis will stay at the Kennedy Space Center. Endeavour goes to Los Angeles. Discovery to the Smithsonian. And the Enterprise to New York. Again, oddly, Evergreen Aviation Museum in McMinnville, not on that list.
Also, oddly, has anybody noticed that we have one of the space shuttles named after an underwater city? That doesn't make any sense.
No.
What is up with that?
No.
I mean, that'd be like having an airplane named Poseidon or something. That's just silly. That just seems, it seems somebody's missing it. Somebody picked up the wrong book.
During a ceremony today at Kennedy, the shuttle program was remembered as legendary to human spaceflight. Astronaut Katie Coleman from the International Space Station says its legacy will live on through the work on ISS.
We will miss the capabilities and the beauty of the space shuttle. It has been a national icon for innovation and exploration for 30 years.
I would have found the space shuttle. I mean, the space shuttle's cool and all. I mean, I couldn't build one.
Don't diss the space shuttle.
I'm not. I'm just saying.
Don't be hating.
It seems
on
like
the space shuttle.
It'd be a lot more impressive if it didn't need an airplane to get it into space.
Well, yeah, but I.
Isn't that the thing?
I've always wondered that about, like, when
or
you.
Or is that when they just transport it from place to place? I guess it launches from the actual. Yeah, I guess it has the rockets. I guess it launches into space. What is it that they put the space shuttle on the back of another thing? Is that when they just take it from one part of the country to another or something?
I don't know.
Because, you know, we've all seen that footage of the space shuttle riding on the back of an airplane.
Yeah.
Why can't they just fly it there?
Because it doesn't. I don't know.
I mean, if you had to get the space shuttle from, like, Florida to Tulsa. What faster way could there possibly... It's the space shuttle. Fly it. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
I don't understand why they don't do that.
Things that are in space don't have to be aerodynamic for flying like in regular,
It flies
airspace.
In regular airspace down here. That's how when it lifts off from the launching pad. It's flying in regular airspace. It's on the ground. It starts on the ground. I'm just saying, fly it wherever you go. Why make the airplane carry it?
I don't know.
Seems like a waste.
You can expect a message from Thomas Gill any moment.
I'm just saying. Well, I'm probably like everyone. It seems like a belt and suspenders thing. Is all I'm saying.
Coleman says the closure of the shuttle program is really just the beginning.
The retirement of the shuttle fleet should not be seen as an end. It represents the next step in extending humanity's reach further into space.
See, now somebody's just screwing with you. They're going, the wings are too small. Well, you're just saying that because you know that I don't know if that's true or not. If that's correct, it's only accidentally. And here's Don Taylor.
Speaking of planes, the world's largest passenger aircraft clipped a much smaller commuter plane on a wet, dark tarmac at New York City's Kennedy Airport, spinning it like a toy as hundreds of passengers sat in both planes.
A scary, scary toy that'll jab out all your eyes.
No one was injured. The two jets, an Airbus A380 operated by Air France and a Bombardier CRJ-700 regional jet, were towed away after the collision around 8 p.m. Monday and will be inspected to determine the extent of their damage. Bill Voss, president of the Flight Safety Foundation, said,
"Oops,
this wasn't just two planes bumping together. The Air France plane really creamed the regional jet.
Creamed. It really hosed it."
He said, "This is not something that happens every day. This is not normal.
That plane, we beat that plane like a rented mule."
The Airbus A380 was taxiing out to a runway when its left wingtip crashed into the tail of the regional jet, operated by Comair for Delta Airlines, and stopped on an intersecting taxiway. It whipped the smaller plane around nearly 90 degrees. Air France had 485 passengers and 25 crew members were aboard Paris Flight 7. The Comair flight was carrying 62 passengers, you know, the ones that were spun around like a top.
Like toys.
And four crew members.
Yes. The best part is how he says it's not like the planes just bumped into each other, as though that would be, but like that, no. Like that ever happens, implying that, I mean, or maybe it happens
really
all the time.
Really creamed it.
I just, really, we just smashed the ungodly hell out of it. We really just crushed it like an empty Meisterbrow. All right. You are listening to, are you getting text messages?
Yeah, somebody is telling me, I had mentioned on Twitter that I sent an email. And that I noticed typos on it as I was hitting send, and then I felt like a retard. And somebody is telling me that yes, if I was using Gmail, it does have an undo button. But I wasn't using Gmail.
We'd agreed to talk about this next hour.
Yahoo. Well, you asked.
I said to somebody texting you, you could have said no.
God.
That would have been accurate.
Yeah.
Also, one syllable.
Yeah, that's true.
Two sorry. Letters. I'm just saying, it's too late now. You've ruined everything again.
You ask me questions, and then you're unhappy with the answers you get.
Well, it's only because you're answering questions I didn't ask. I mean, I guess I don't mean to be all specific about it. I don't mean to be honing in on the exact nature of... I'm just saying.
I just feel information is valuable, and I'm trying to share, but,
Well, it was the information I'd asked for. It's okay, I'm just saying. It's all right. I just, I know how we get sidetracked. We tend to... That's champagne that you can't recork. You know, is the thing. You are, what the hell are we doing now? You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us later on this hour. Entertainment news right now, moments from now. In fact, now it's what? Don Taylor.
Two people were found shot to death in a home on Ammons Drive in Longview, Washington, early Monday. And a 43-year-old man has turned himself into police. Longview police found the bodies of 36-year-old Bruce Camp and 39-year-old Dana Enyart shortly after midnight. Police say Enyart's ex-husband, Michael Feeney, went to the police department around 1 a.m. saying he wanted to turn himself in for the shootings. According to court documents, Feeney was dating his ex-wife, Enyart, and suspected she was cheating on him with Kemp.
His ex-wife who?
Apparently, Feeney, Enyart is his ex-wife, and they were dating.
Okay, but what is the name?
Enyart.
Please dispel.
E-N-Y-E-A-R-T.
Okay.
Enyart.
Was she living in an igloo or something?
No. But, so they were married at one time, and apparently they were dating again, even though they're divorced.
Taub style.
And then he suspected she was cheating on him with this other guy.
Again, Taub style.
Detective said Feeney watched the couple at Camp's house, then left and got several handguns.
Okay.
He returned.
Well, I have just one.
Watched them again.
Yeah.
And when the pair went into the bedroom, he walked in through an unlocked door, confronted the couple, and shot at them a dozen times. Enyart was a nurse at St. John Medical Center. Feeney was booked into the Cowlitz County Jail on suspicion of two counts of first-degree murder. Although, I don't think suspicion.
So he shot at them. He shot them.
He okay. shot them dead.
So it's not, he didn't shoot at them. He shot them.
Yeah.
Yeah, the at is, I think, superfluous there.
He shot at them a dozen times. He may have only hit them, like, five or six.
I guess it's true. I mean, really, it's how much, sometimes, you know,
how much killing does a person need, really?
No, just enough kill.
He's being helped without bail.
Okay. You're listening to Legion of News, and this is all true. Here is Don Taylor.
It was already clear from the fight over the budget. It should be seen as act one of a three-part budget drama, as the Los Angeles Times' Doyle McManus put it, foreshadowing the fights ahead over the debt ceiling and the 2012 federal budget. Yet the way in which key leaders only narrowly managed to avoid a government shutdown over $38 billion has made people even more concerned about raising the current $14.25 trillion debt ceiling. White House Press Secretary Jerry Carney, you can say this. White House Press Secretary Jay Carney warned that a failure to raise the debt ceiling would be Armageddon-like in terms of the economy. Carney says this is not the time to play politics.
How much better would it be if this soundbite was from Jay the Carney?
Or Art Carney.
I was going to say Art Carney, but I don't really know how to do an Art Carney voice, yeah. Except as, what's his name, Norton. But if it was Jay the Carney, and, you know, and his response to every question is like, you know, it was like...
Three for a dollar!
I'll give you a quarter, but you got to, you know, sell an eighth and then give me the rest. Or whatever.
The economic impact of holding hostage the debt ceiling vote to other considerations would be catastrophic. So I think the need to move on this is quite clear.
Yeah, that's not very interesting.
No. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner told lawmakers last week that the government would hit the limit on May 16th at the latest. And if the ceiling isn't raised until July 8th, the United States would have to begin defaulting on its debt. It's all fake money. So it's like, everyone's going to be mad at us if we don't pay them back the trillions of dollars that we already owe them, like, for a month. Ben Bernanke has said the failing to raise the ceiling would amount to a recovery-ending event. There's always a bit of posturing when the vote comes to raise the debt ceiling, notes the New York Times. But what makes this time different is that many conservative freshmen want to use the leverage of the debt limit vote to make their stand and push for broad structural changes to entitlement programs. Carney says that when it comes to raising the debt ceiling, Congress has no choice in the matter.
We do not need to play chicken with our economy.
We should totally play chicken with our economy.
Linking the raising of the debt ceiling to anything. We should do that right away.
That'd be much more exciting. Just get on an open road and just us and China, just driving right at each other.
The Republican freshmen are particularly focused on Medicare and Medicaid, although what they've outlined would have a negligent effect, because even though it would cut $6 trillion over 10 years, it would be offset by about $4 trillion in tax cuts. Meanwhile, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell doesn't want his caucus to filibuster so as not to be blamed for the debt crisis, but will force Democrats to produce all the votes.
Fantastic.
Yay. Police are examining what appears to be a human skull found on the outskirts of a bird sanctuary in Long Island, New York, potentially the ninth set of remains discovered in the probe of a suspected serial killer. Lieutenant Kevin Smith of Nassau County Police Department said the skull was found Monday around 3:30 p.m. in the town of Oyster Bay. About 4 hours earlier, a New York State police officer and his cadaver dog spotted another set of remains about a mile and a half away, and authorities worked to determine whether those remains are human. These discoveries come on the first day that authorities are probing the deaths of several young women searched for evidence in and around Nassau County. Since December, 8 sets of human remains have been found in Suffolk County, just east of Nassau County, and roughly 5 miles from the sites of Monday's discovery. Lieutenant Kevin Smith of the County Police Department said, "It's all been very startling. All of it has been. It's just amazing that we're finding these things. Obviously, we have a lot to do." Authorities are working on the presumption that a single person is responsible for the women's killings. The four victims have been identified thus far, all advertised prostitution services on at websites such as Craigslist.
Yeah, you know, somebody's got to like expand beyond the whole. You wouldn't think that there would be enough hookers for all of the serial killers, because they say at any given time there's like 35 serial killers working the country.
It's one-stop shopping.
Well,
really, it's easy.
I don't even know what that means.
I mean, you're just going, "Wow, I'm looking for a lady to kill." Craigslist. Easy squeezy. Just go on Craigslist. It's like, you know, it's like a menu laid out of prostitutes on Craigslist, and you pick one and you meet her and
it's not a menu of murder victims, you're saying, because that would be weird and probably the sort of thing that would get you investigated by somebody.
But
it kind of isn't it? Is he killing women from Craigslist?
They are all prostitutes who advertised on services such as Craigslist.
Okay, so this is okay, but this is not like a Craigslist. Like, this isn't like the Craigslist guy that we had a couple years ago.
No.
Okay, so but they're not streetwalkers either.
No.
Okay, see, that's the thing, because I guess at least that's a step into the modern age, because it just seems like, you know, it just seems like picking up chicks in your soundproof van. I mean, even hookers have got to figure out at some point that you don't want to get in that van. That's a bad van to get into. Anything where it's like, you know, it's just a whole lot of like duct tape and the sound of manacles swinging in the back. You would think at some point that would. Natural selection would get rid of that kind of hooker, I would think, before they could have hooker daughters of their own.
Yeah.
So, and apparently that's the case until now. We moved into a binary era for that sort of a thing.
Right. Now you can look online for hookers, and you don't even have to have the van.
And you can also get yourself maybe a pair of shoes while you're online as well. You were listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Here is Sean Taylor.
What?
Nothing.
Okay. Well, fans of Canute the polar bear are still very, very upset that the Berlin Zoo wants to display Knut in the city's Natural History Museum, like any common Arctic specimen. To stuff Knut is to abuse the feelings of millions of Knut fans all over the world, posted a visitor in the zoo's condolence book.
We're not asking them to do it for us. It's not like we're asking. It's not like they have to hold him open while we pack in the sawdust or something. They can just show up later when it's done.
People also believe that Knut deserves a worthy burial. Like, I
burial.
Guess, like an actual funeral with a casket and a, I don't know. Knut's sudden
somebody
death...
throwing themselves on top of the casket. Why?
Knut's sudden death last month of brain abnormalities left thousands of Germans devastated. Really?
No.
Devastated?
No. Usually it's Germans who do the devastating.
And many feel stuffing the 4-year-old would be a desecration. Others apparently feel Knut lovers should just get a life. Zoo director Bernard Blaskowitz said, "The problem is, people take their human feelings and put them into animals." He reserved particular scorn for the, quote, silly presents that mourners left outside the zoo, like flowers and posters.
Okay, see, why can't we get guys like that in America? Why can't we have a zookeeper like that here who just, you know, when somebody starts dropping off teddy bears for, you know, actual bears, just says, "You people are retards," and just shreds them, you know, and just doesn't, you know, here's the thing, you got to say this for Germans. They don't really brook any nonsense.
No.
That's a, you know, they're sort of an inflexible people in that way. Not really a sense of humor as such either, but, you know, that's fine. They just...
Take your silly presents!
Yeah, I mean, that's... You can tell... I mean, I think any look at the historical record of the last century would say that Germany doesn't tolerate its comedians very well, certainly. They seem to be rather... rather binary themselves in their way of thinking. So, I mean, but at least we could say that is, people aren't just sitting there just wailing away, holding like a plushy squeeze doll out front and screaming about a goddamn bear, which, who is cute and everything, but
Yeah.
He's dead. You know, things die. You know, move on. Jesus. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Thieves broke into a performing arts organization's van in Honolulu, Hawaii, and stole three puppets worth $10,000, cutting the company's cast in half in the middle of a popular tour and prompting workers to frantically dig through trash bins in search of the missing characters.
There's no puppet worth $10,000.
Well, the Maui Academy of Performing Arts officials said the cloth-covered foam puppets were created in 2009 by puppeteer Frank Kane, who once worked for Jim Henson and the Muppets, and they were stolen Saturday night in somewhere I can't pronounce in Hawaii. The group made a plea to the public's help in locating the missing puppets as workers searched roads and trash bins. Executive and Artistic Director David Johnson said, "They're really not of any value to whoever took them, but they're of great value to us. We scoured the area looking for them." The theft occurred as the company prepared to fly to Oahu to perform The Further Adventures of Tiki Tiki Tembo for elementary and preschool children.
Do they still teach Tiki Tiki Tembo? Is that still a book they have people read?
No, you're thinking of Ricky Tikki Tavi.
No. I'm thinking of Tiki Tiki Tembo. No Sai Rembo. Peri Uri Uchi Guchi Pit Peri Pembo.
Okay. I stand.
In your face, Don Taylor.
I stand corrected.
Rube.
I didn't think you would know popular Chinese folk tales.
I don't know no books or do no reading. That was a thing they had us read in school when I was a wee lad, and I wouldn't think they would do it now because it is an exaggerated version of the whole son number one, son number two, because like then the second son is named like Ted or something, and so it's a whole thing about it, the whole book is about Ted, you know, and it's sort of having to stand on his own, and you know, and the idea that you are not your name and the whatever, because the parents give the first child this insanely long name because he is the most honored first son, and then the second son is like afterthought kid. Wow. And anyway.
Well, the missing puppets portrayed Chang, Tiki Tembo's younger brother.
There we go. Not Ted.
Their mother and Nobu, the village minstrel. The missing puppets characters were recast by reconfiguring facial features on other puppets. Production manager said, "We did some emergency plastic surgery." John said losing three out of six puppets put a financial strain on the nonprofit's ability to put on shows because they're used so frequently. He says, "We're operating hand to mouth right now.
So to speak.
And these thieves just cut off one of our hands."
You can't go hand to mouth, Don. Never hand to mouth.
Especially not with puppets.
No. And by the way, it's a thing. It's like ping pong balls and cloth made by a guy who kind of knew Jim Henson once. Get some new cloth. Don't you figure like the Kermit the Frog that you saw? Don't you figure there were several of those? I mean, there had to have been many.
Eventually, yes.
It's not like that holds together forever.
Because there is like the very first... First Kermit, who is, I believe, in the Smithsonian.
It is. I have seen it there. But it's because I imagine it was like anything else where they had, it's like they had multiple General Lees. There must have been numerous, like a side view Miss Piggy and an upskirt Miss Piggy and a, whatever.
Yeah. Like Lassie. There's a Kermit that,
Could
jump over a wall, and a Kermit that can open a door, and a Kermit that knows how to, carry something in its mouth.
Kermit with the kung fu grip.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's do our science news.
Here's your... God damn, it's 12:30 already. All right, another half hour of our lives wasted. You are listening to Science on the March, or will be momentarily, brought to you by Squires Electric. That is squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical contractors, installers, and supervisors. And they're they're going to be, if you have them out at your house or your business, whatever, they're going to be like the smartest guys you meet all month. Probably, in the top three of the guys you meet all year. I mean, there's no getting around that fact, because
good looking,
strapping men they are
well
as well.
Well groomed as well.
Except for Donna, she's not a strapping man, but she probably appreciates a strapping man every now and again. So I'm just saying, they're all of a mind, they're of the body, as they say. But speaking of things that are binary propositions, that's like the light switch where you turn it on and it's it either works or it doesn't. If it works, hey, swell, it works. If not, then you just do the thing of wiggling the light. Even wiggling the light bulb sort of unnerves me sometimes, because I wonder if... Do you ever do this? Do you have a morbid fear when you're putting in the light bulb that you're going to miss somehow and your finger's going to go into the socket? It's like I'm doing some sort of a 2001 grasping of the obelisk or something where the thing is going zzz, moving slowly towards the socket. And I am always afraid that at the last moment the earth will shift or there'll be, some sort of tectonic activity and I'll just slip and the hand right into the socket and then... One dead Rick. So you just don't. I'm not saying you have to call them to fix a light bulb. I mean, you can. They'd probably appreciate the money, but that would also paint you as a bit of a mark. So you don't want to do that.
I've been terrified of that ever since seeing Eye of the Needle with Donald Sutherland.
Good reference. Well done. Is that where he ends up jamming the? No, I'm thinking of.
He's going to jam a screwdriver in it to like knock out all the electricity, but then the screwdriver, he drops it or something, and so at the last minute to like save the day or do whatever, he just sticks his fingers in the light socket and electrocutes himself and like knocks out all the lights so the bad guys can't come or something.
That's the Ken Follett thing.
Yeah.
No, honestly, I'm thinking of something else altogether.
No, it's Ken Follett.
No, but I'm thinking of, now I was thinking of something else.
Oh.
Yeah. We'll just take that whole part out and post later. So, change a light bulb yourself. You probably don't want to go much beyond that, though. So, if it's down to repairing or fixing, or certainly you're trying to, install things or upgrade things, really, unless you are, to some degree, that's a thing that you shouldn't self-teach. Because, teaching is a matter of trial and error, and I think you get, like, one error at the most, and then after that, it's just, burying you in a cigar box. So, contact Squires Electric for all of your electric needs, whether it's, your Ethernet, your broadband, your office intercom system, just the flat-out electrical wiring in the walls. And the fact that it's in the walls, again, it just adds all kinds of difficulty to it. So don't take care of it yourself. Don't be a hero. It's 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. Proud sponsors of Science on the March. Here is Don Taylor.
Japan has designated the Fukushima disaster a 7 on the international scale, making it the only meltdown aside from Chernobyl to receive the worst rating for nuclear accidents. Previously, the incident had been designated a level 5 event, equivalent to Three Mile Island. Japanese officials said Tuesday that the updated rating on the international nuclear event scale came after new estimates showed that 10,000 terabecquerels of radiation per hour were spewing into the environment in the first hours of the accident.
That doesn't sound like a lot.
Well, 10,000 of them.
Sounds like
That's a lot. Now the level has dropped to less than 1 per hour. Some nuclear industry experts have long believed that the meltdown resulted in a massive radiation release, but Japan officials have been slow to announce that this was the case. A new study confirms that teen drug use is trending in the wrong direction. Steve Pasyerb, with the partner at drugfree.org. The partnership at drugfree.org, that's the name of their company. Okay. He says that 62% of teens who reported alcohol use had their first drink by age 15. He says his people went right to the source.
The source being like a fat kid named Andy at the bowling alley who sells you cheap weed.
It's a nationwide study done in school, right in front of the kids in schools all across America, public, private, and parochial. And the parent segment is done in-home.
That's always how you're sure to get the truthful response from kids is do it in school in front of everybody else.
Right.
They're not going to lie there. Seems like it's only trending in the wrong direction if you're a parent who doesn't want to have peace and quiet in the house by doping up your kids. If that's the case, then things are coming up roses for you.
Also, do you remember being a kid in school and having them put things like this in front of you? And then when you find out that it's completely anonymous and it's not going to be tracked to you, you could just say anything you damn well please.
Oh, yeah, no, we would just make stuff up with impunity.
Yeah.
Yeah, we would just screw with
them. I drink 5 beers a day.
I drank a quart of whiskey before class. Yeah.
Pasyerb calls it a major statistical setback.
This is a drug... Two, yes.
What the study really tells us is a decade of progress on teenage drug and alcohol abuse is really over. If you take a longer view of the issue, we have a new generation of teens who are looking at this issue differently and behaving differently.
Okay.
That doesn't mean anything. That's just a guy who has to put out a report every month to keep his job. And that's this month's report.
Well, yeah, and his job depends on keeping people scared about kids doing drugs.
Well, kids do drugs. Let's have no illusions about that. Kids do drugs all the time. Your kid is probably stoned. Whoever you are, your kid is probably stoned right now. But here's the thing. Nothing you can do about it. Can't be stopped or helped. So that's just the way the cookie crumbles.
Well, let's talk a little bit about dinosaurs.
Can we?
Sure.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. We're still in science, aren't we? All right, there we go.
How did they get so big?
Are you turning into Margaret Cho over there? How you get so tall?
We're talking, of course, about sauropods, Rick Emerson, the biggest animals ever to roam the Earth. Scientists are trying to figure out exactly what physiological combo allowed Apatosaurus, also known as the Brontosaurus, Brachiosaurus, and this other one, to grow so gigantic, 150 feet and 70 tons, while munching leaves. Their answer? Their long neck, bulging tummy, and aversion to chewing, said one research team from the University of Bonn. The longer the animal's neck, the more plants it could reach without wasting precious energy moving around. its tiny toothless head, lightweight so as not to strain the neck, efficiently cropped plants and sent them down the chute without any chewing. There, the meal would sit in the stomach for up to 2 weeks, and the bigger the body, the better, giving greater scope for the gastric juices to do their work. Other scientists say they're not sure the theory of sauropod gigantism is airtight, but nevertheless emphasize that the sauropod is one of the best land animals that's ever been invented.
So is that the sauropod, wait now, is that a class of dinosaur, or
yes,
is it a specific?
Yeah, they're the big ones, like a
Brachiosaurus,
like the
or
Brachiosaurus
something,
and the Brontosaurus, with the really huge bodies and the long necks and the tiny heads.
All right, then.
And they wanted to know how they're so big if they're vegetarians. And that's basically how.
And speaking of which, next hour, I got this question about the Flintstones.
Okay.
We'll get to it next hour. There's Don Taylor.
Farming is moving indoors where the sun never shines and where rainfall is irrelevant. The perfect crop field could
Farming is moving, quote, where the sun never shines?
Exactly.
What are you growing there?
The perfect crop field could be inside a windowless building with meticulously controlled light, temperature, humidity, air quality, and nutrition.
Oh.
It could be in a New York high-rise, a Siberian bunker, or a sprawling complex in the Saudi desert. Advocates say that this, or something like it, may be an answer to the world's food problems. The world already has trouble feeding itself. Half of the people on Earth live in cities, and nearly half of those, about 3 billion, are hungry or malnourished. Food prices, currently soaring, are buffeted by droughts, floods, and the cost of energy required to plant, fertilize, harvest, and transport it. So, in the Netherlands, a place that you and I know where it is.
Sure.
Dutch bioengineers have taken the concept of the greenhouse a step further, growing vegetables, herbs, and houseplants in enclosed and regulated environments where even the natural light is excluded.
Does it seem like there's a lot of famine sweeping through Holland?
Well, no.
Why are we always solving these problems in white countries? Why?
Because the other people are too busy, like, trying to find food.
They're
sitting in huts eating dirt. They don't have laboratories.
But they don't have window boxes. They don't have They don't have houses. Aren't they just sort of sitting in a hole, just kind of...
No.
Just waiting for a camera crew to come by? I'm just saying, it just seems like maybe we ought to be testing this in the conditions where it's going to be used. Instead of going to Switzerland, you know, this man in a chalet is missing his afternoon tea. How shall we say? He is without crumpets. It seems like maybe that's not the place where you want to be testing the solution.
Yeah, but I think...
If it's going to be in a desert in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, but while the scientists are inventing the things, they don't want to, like, go far from home. They want to be able to go home at night and watch TV.
That's the real answer. That's why all of those movies... That's why every bad movie you've ever seen made in Tahiti got made. Because everybody wants to go film in Tahiti. You know, the best made movie in the world is, you know, and we're going to film it in Antarctica for 6 months. Never going to get made.
I mean, if you're a Dutch bioengineer and you're like testing your LED lights and your indoor grown strawberries, would you rather do it just sort of in a basement in the Netherlands? Or do you want to actually get on a plane and go to Kenya and do it there when you could have just stayed home and made all the stuff at home?
I'm with you. Well, let's not confuse the. I'm not going to be helping anybody anywhere.
No.
Not here, not there, not on a train, not on a plane.
Well, if you've ever played live trivia at a bar or a restaurant, never mind. You know, you yourself, for example, have talked about how you cannot play these things.
No.
Partly because you hate those people that cheat by jumping onto their phone and they claim they're not cheating, but you know they're cheating because they're looking answers
now,
up.
Now, that actually is not an issue for me. I think you were conflating me with somebody else.
Oh, yeah, your issue is you don't think the questions are always completely accurate.
No, that's also... No, see, again, that's...
Not saying it right?
No, it's not that. It's just that I don't... The thing about me going to trivia nights, the reason I can't do it is... I mean, there have been instances where some idiot judge who's easily cowed by a drunken mob will, like, allow them credit for something that's not accurate. That happened at a Wire trivia night that I went to, where the guy and the judge were like, we'll give you half credit, and it was just wrong. My thing is, like, it's the same reason I can't do crossword puzzles, because I don't care, couldn't care about them less. But it's like once I begin, I am just so unbelievably hyper-competitive that I take it way too seriously and I get incredibly angry if I start to lose. So,
well, you may or may not want to try a Google a Day, a new trivia game that's been rolled out by Google today or yesterday. The daily quiz offers a single question that's supposed to be hard enough that typing a quick set of words into a search query box won't find the solution. Answers to these questions will be posted the next day on the Google a Day page and above the New York Times crossword puzzle.
Give a sample question. I'm curious as to what kind of question you can't Google for.
Because
you know that'll become its own. Here's the funny thing about that is that'll become its own top Google result, like in the Google Trends page or something. It'll be, you know, that will become the most Googled question every single day.
Is
whatever that, you know, that is. I mean, that's the thing. It's like they said there's not going to be any Google result, but the thing about it is, it seems like their algorithm is such that if one, the closer people get with their guesses, the more Google itself will refine what you're searching for. It also makes you wonder if they have to tweak the algorithm every day to thwart suggested responses from Google that would give you the rest of the answer if you were partially there.
Well, ostensibly what they're doing is they're creating questions that require you to do multiple searches to find all of the information that you need for the answer.
I'd be curious to know what one of these questions looks like.
I think I have one here. Okay. I cut off the bottom of the thing, and it didn't have. Well, if you go to googleaday.com, it actually has the question. Today's question: my name is Robert. One day before my brother Rohan's 19th birthday, our father had an album on the Billboard 200. Name the album.
All right, so I could see that would require multiple steps to get to from here to there.
Yeah. So the obvious ulterior motive is for Google to get users more deeply engaged in search and to show off Google's abilities to them.
I guess my question, though, is that does Google have to adjust their own algorithm every day, though? Because if they put that question up at 8 in the morning, and obviously it's going to be a whole thing where, like, everybody wants to be the first guy to, like, I solved the Google a day thing. If they put that question up at 8 a.m., by noon, when you search and you type in Rohan, is Google going to auto-suggest the answer based on everybody who's been searching for it all day? And if for that not to be the case, it's like Google would have to adjust their own algorithm every single day, which seems unwieldy.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
That seems implausible to me. Yeah. I'm not saying they can't do it. I'm just saying it seems tricky.
Well, I wonder what would happen right now if you actually... I don't know.
Somebody says, I just Googled Rick Emerson, and I swear to God, the first result with pictures of a sheep. Okay, thank you, sir. Yes. I appreciate that. All right.
So,
I got nothing. That's a thing I'll have to...
Okay.
No, this is the same reason I don't do, like... What is it that you guys do? Do you all do the word find or word feud?
Yeah.
What is that game? It's like Scrabble or something?
Yeah, there's two of them. There's Word Feud, which used to only be for the Android and is now also on iPhone. And the other one is Words with Friends.
Okay, so what is it? But they're the same thing. Are they both basically Scrabble?
They're both very like Scrabble.
Yeah, and that's I am the only person I know that isn't doing that. Like everybody, Siegfried was here the other day and his phone like went off in his pocket. And he's like, hold on a second, Words with Friends. And he had to like, you know, do a thing. And Laura has asked me about that. She's like, no, you really ought to get this. She's like, you're into words and language and whatever. It's just that games, I cannot play games. Because it's this paradox of a thing I don't care about instantly becomes a thing that I care about. I don't even care about the game. I just care about winning. So I just care about winning in this like completely overdeveloped, overzealous way, while at the same time it's making the rest of my brain angry because I don't care about the game at all. I could give a rat's ass about the game. So I have to stay away from those. I am curious about the underpinnings of the Google thing, though. I'll over the break, I'll look into that.
And finally, tainted milk that killed 3 young children and sickened 36 in China was poisoned intentionally, according to Chinese state media. Investigators found the milk from 2 dairies in Gansu province had been laced with nitrite, a potentially deadly industrial salt. Police have taken a suspect into custody. The food scandal is one of many that have rocked China in recent years. Reports also emerged Monday that Chinese officials have busted 95 people in Henan province for producing tainted pork meat. The detainees allegedly made, sold, or used pig feed containing clenbuterol, which is known to cause nausea, dizziness, headaches, and heart palpitations. The drug causes pigs to turn their fat into muscle quickly, making their meat more valuable.
Okay, then. So this was... But when you say it was intentional, it was Tylenol poisoning intentional?
I believe so, yes.
Like some guys saying, hey, I'll fix their red wagon and, you know, dosing the pigs with whatever. Okay, all right. Is that the end of science?
It is.
There we go. There's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. SquiresElectric.com or 503-252-1609. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show is up next hour. RickEmersonShow.com today. Penis Watch, Corpse Watch, Snuff Watch, and we'll talk about last night's episode of House, which was the first after, I think, 3 weeks or 9 weeks or 4 weeks or something, hiatus. So last night's episode of House, as well as the Penis Watch, the Snuff Watch, and the Corpse Watch. That is all on the way. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Police say they found a number of guns inside a car during a traffic stop in southeast Portland last night. Officers attempted to pull over a car occupied by several men in Southeast Market Street near Southeast 112th just before 11. Police said the driver of the car kept going until the car reached Southeast 110th when several men inside the car opened the doors and ran. More than a dozen patrol cars joined the two-hour search for the suspects. Police said a search of the car revealed several guns. Witnesses said one of the weapons looked like a shotgun. Officers eventually found and detained three men, but investigators said two others may have eluded police. Investigators said charges may be pending against the three suspects.
You know, if you're a cop in that part of town, I wonder if other cops, if they have more respect for you because it's dangerous, you know, and it's full of ne'er-do-wells, or if they view it as like fishing in a stocked pond. You know, where it really doesn't take any effort. You just throw the line in, and 3 seconds later, there's a rainbow trout. You know, you just sit there long enough, and a guy will run by you shooting at another guy or setting something on fire or just, you know, jamming crack into his eyeballs. And, you know, and then you just bring him in, and it seems like you could get your stats up really easily there.
I think so.
It's a target-rich environment.
An Oregon dairy has been fined $30,000 for dumping farm waste into a tributary of the Willamette River. Attorney General John Kroger announced that the Volbita Dairy pleaded guilty Monday in Linn County Circuit Court to three counts of second-degree unlawful water pollution. The case stems from incidents between January 2009 and May 2010. The dairy was fined and placed on 3 years probation.
Volbita sounds like a really, really ugly farmer's daughter that would be left over after all the good-looking daughters were taken. And he'd be, well, we got Volbita here, and she'd have glasses on, and, oh, man! You know, just sort of hideous.
Bail was set on Monday at $100,000 for an Estacada man accused of driving the van that struck a 67-year-old Malala bicyclist who later died. Jacob John Kroll, 26, surrendered to Oregon State Police at his attorney's office in Portland last Friday. In court Monday, Kroll was officially charged with felony hit-and-run and tampering with evidence. Thomas Mossman was struck by a van while riding his bicycle on Highway 211 west of Malala. He was hospitalized until he died March 31st. Earlier this week, OSP troopers located the vehicle suspected of being involved in the hit and run. The gray 1995 Dodge Grand Caravan was parked outside of a residence south of Estacada. Investigators discovered that Kroll lives there, but they weren't able to locate him until he surrendered.
I'm not going to make any Kroll jokes here just because it seems like it's too easy.
That would be too easy.
You are listening to Legion of News. It is, for those of you listening to us live, it is 12:43 Pacific time here in the great city of Portland, Oregon. Cascadia.fm. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or legionofnews.com. It's also available on your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
A man who blamed greed for ruining his marriage has acted out the ultimate revenge on his estranged wife. The Canadian couple sold their house for $395,000, after which he gave every cent to charity. The man, 58, has also boasted that he put all of his bank statements in a bucket of water and made papier-mâché out of them.
This sounds very much like an urban legend.
The man told the federal magistrate's court, sitting in Victoria, that he bought hundreds of envelopes and posted $395,000 in donations. He said he was now jobless, with $2,000 in the bank, a $1,000 car, and land worth $10,000. The magistrate concluded the man had taken the drastic action to deprive his wife of any money after 20 years of marriage.
This sounds like one of those things where it's like the chick sells the husband's car for $10 or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying it didn't happen, but, you know, it seems like the definition of cutting off your nose to spite your face, because now you're just some broke-ass guy who will now never get laid.
Yeah.
So, I mean, have fun with that, I guess.
Yeah. He said, I did it in an emotional way as I saw the greed of money destroying our marriage. He also disclaimed interest in his dead mother's estate. He decided to give the money away anonymously, quote, to eliminate the cause of the divorce. He bought about 300 to 400 envelopes with the already pre-stamped and said put a random amount of cash in each, put charity names and addresses on them, and sent them out.
It seems like if you're already getting divorced, you might as well just keep the money. It just seems like you're losing, you know, that's throwing good money after bad, no pun intended. You've already got the divorce, you might as well have the money too.
I don't understand people that make that sort of decision that I don't want the money because, you know, it's tainted by something, or it makes me think of someone, or it's money. It's just money. Money's important. Money's necessary. Money isn't, you know.
Yeah, no, I don't give a damn. I don't care where it comes from. That's why I think, like, if I was not so afraid of just being like the guy who was inadvertently foiled by having a taillight go out when I didn't realize it, I would just totally be I would be just a massive drug dealing kingpin right now. Because I think I'm maybe a little bit sharper than the average fool. And so you got to figure that if you're just a little bit smarter, you could probably do that. And there's money in the bank. And I don't care. I have no profiting off the misery of others. Blah 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 blah. Doesn't matter. Don't care. I'm with you. There's no. Yeah, here's the thing. If money arrives, on your figurative doorstep, it's because the universe wanted you to have it. That's my belief. Yeah, the money is meant for you.
Exactly.
Excellent.
A reality television series that profiles female deputies is in hot water with one Broward County, Florida city. Pompano Beach city leaders have learned a recent arrest within city limits was filmed by the production crew taping a TV show. The Real Policemen, Police Women of Broward County is aired nationally on the cable television network TLC. Pompano Beach was in much of the first season, but some residents complained about the cameras. The BSO deputies get overly dramatic when they arrest people. To me, that's a problem, said community activist Vincent Thrower at last month's commission meeting. However, days after Thrower launched the complaint in front of commissioners, BSO deputies arrested the 31-year-old during a prostitution sting. The bust happened at a motel in Pompano Beach. The city's issue is that the film crew was denied a permit to shoot a second season of the series. There were verbal conversations as well as written commitments for it not to occur, said Pompano Beach mayor. We're so proud of so many things off in our city, but they were just showing some of the seediest areas in our community, and we had enough.
Well, because who wants to watch a program just about, like, here's a glorious place you can't afford to live?
Yeah. No. Well, also, it's like, you see the first season of the series, and it's like, you know, like cops, Portland, and you're going, woohoo, it's going to show off how nice Portland is. And it's all just cops in, like, Southeast.
Yeah.
Just arresting the worst dirtbags. And then you start thinking, oh, maybe this isn't giving people the best impression of our town.
Well, that's like you haven't gotten to this part yet, but that's to some degree the thing that was like such a mystery about The Wire. I mean, I can understand why the city of Baltimore said, "Hey, come on, film here because it's money." But when you are on season two or something right now,
yeah, season two.
When you get to season five, which there are no spoilers here, but season five is all about it takes place largely at the Baltimore Sun. The real paper, using the real logo, they depict the paper, a replica of the newsroom. I mean, the actual Baltimore Sun, which is not painted in, like, the most flattering light. And they had to get permission to do all of that stuff. And it just beats them senseless for the course of an entire season. And so I always wonder about stuff like that. I guess it's sort of the publicity at any price is sort of, because there is such a thing as bad publicity, I think.
As the people of Pompano Beach are figuring out.
I have a friend of mine, the cops guys came and they busted a house across the street from him. And he said it happened, the actual filming happened while he was out of town, so he didn't know about it. And I guess he didn't talk to his neighbors much for reasons that might be obvious. And so he's sitting there and he was, you know, just on the couch watching Cops one night. He's like, oh, it's Portland. Hey, it's Southeast. That looks kind of familiar. Hey, honey, is this? Oh, my God. And then it's just like the cops across the street, like 6 months earlier, like, you know, battering down like U.S. Marshals, like kicking in the door across the street, which is awesome. That's the that never happens to me. So, I mean, that's, you know, there's a little strange hometown pride to be had there.
A little bit.
All right.
Let's do our entertainment.
Let's, shall we? Here's your entertainment news for Tuesday here at Legion of News.
A valuable comic book featuring the debut of Superman has resurfaced in a storage locker, and police said Monday it appears to be the same one stolen from Nicolas Cage more than a decade ago. The mint copy of Action Comics number 1 was in police custody after being found last week in a San Fernando Valley storage locker. An investigation into its theft is underway. The comic was authenticated and appears to be the one stolen from Cage in 2000. It's unclear whether the 1938 comic will be returned to Nicolas Cage. Cage accepted an insurance payout after its theft and will have to work out the details with the company. The actor made clear in a statement he would like to have it back. It is divine providence. I wish I could do a Nicolas Cage impression. It's divine providence that the comic was found, and I am hopeful that the heirloom will be returned to my family.
No, so you're using way too much energy, and you're acting. You're like putting too much color and inflection into that. The key with Nicolas Cage is I can't really do it, but you just have to do everything. It's like a sigh throughout your nose. It's everything is just being sighed through your nasal cavity, like Maureen Dowd.
Cage is an avid comic collector, and the Action Comics issue is one of the highest coveted books in superhero history. A copy of the issue was sold in March 2010 for $1.5 million.
Wow.
It was originally sold for 10 cents. The recovery of Cage's comic was first reported Sunday by the Ventura County Star. The paper said it was found in a storage locker in the San Fernando Valley last week, and that a comic collector who originally sold the book to Cage verified its authenticity.
$1.5 million. When I was a boy, it was only $40,000 or something. So Jesus, what has happened in just? I mean, that's 20 years, but still, I mean, that it's gone from $40,000 to $1.5 million.
I have nothing to base this on, but I think it's Todd McFarlane's fault.
Probably. Everything is Todd McFarlane's fault.
While legendary music producer Phil Spector sits in prison, his lawyers are poised to urge an appellate court to throw out his second-degree murder conviction and grant a new trial on grounds of judicial error and prosecutorial misconduct. Oral arguments were scheduled today before the California Second District Court of Appeal, which has received hundreds of pages of legal briefs from Spector's lawyers and the state attorney general's office over the past year. If Spector is to receive a new trial, it would be his third on the charge that he murdered actress Lana Clarkson at his castle-like mansion on February 3, 2003. His first jury in 2007 deadlocked 10-2 in favor of a guilty verdict. A second jury convicted him in April 2009, and he was sentenced to 19 years to life in prison.
Please let it be true. I just want to say, just for the endless variety of wigs that he would wear this time around, because you remember he was like the first time he had that like Puddin' Basin haircut, he had like the Prince Valiant.
Yeah.
And then it was like he had the weird like electric Beethoven thing going on, where it was all like he was all huge. He had like the big the white man's fro going on. And then now apparently those were all just rugs, I guess.
Yeah.
And now they said he's bald and he sits in his cell playing chess with invisible cockroaches.
Yeah. I love him.
I really do.
Yeah. Ashley Judd is apologizing for comments she made about rap music in her memoir, All That Is Bitter and Sweet. I'm deeply remorseful that anything I may have said in All That Is Bitter and Sweet would hurt adherents of genres that represent their culture, she blogged. In her book, Judd wrote the following. As far as I'm concerned, most rap and hip-hop music, which it's rape culture and insanely abusive lyrics and depictions of girls and women as hoes, is the contemporary soundtrack of misogyny.
Rape culture?
Rape culture.
Okay. You know, that wasn't, but this wasn't like in a blog. This is in a book.
She wrote that in her book.
That presumably somebody had to read and edit and proofread. But I mean, it's not like she just blurted that out after too many cocktails.
No.
Like, that's a thing that made its way. What's interesting about that is not that she said that, because people say retarded crap all the time, that nobody along the way went, maybe ixnay on the ape ray.
Well,
Ultra
and
K.
Actually, you know, there are I know women who feel this way.
I'm not saying
it's not an uncommon.
Well, no, I don't care whether she thinks it's true or not, or whether it is true or not. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying clearly that is a thing that her publicist doesn't want said. So don't you think if you had a client who was writing a book, you'd ask to, you know, read it maybe go. In other words, if you saw something that. If they're retracting it now, that means they wouldn't want it out in the first place. So I'm surprised that nobody said, we're eventually going to have to retract this. So why don't we just take it out now?
Well, she's not really retracting it so much as she's apologizing for saying it.
Well,
But
it's the same thing. I mean, it's a semantic difference. I'm saying from her point of view, in a business sense, that is a net loss. It's not like she's gaining anything by saying that. Her people obviously wish that they could undo the fact that it was ever out there.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that Ashley Judd is, I mean, maybe she's like some business Mensa and I'm just not seeing it. I mean, it seems like you, that's why you hire people, is so people stop you on the way to like, you know, on the way to the publication, stage, and they go, ooh, let's just remove this phrase where you say Jews run everything.
Or it could just be that she's surrounded by, like, white people in the South, and they read that and figured, it's
great stuff, Ash.
Nobody who likes hip-hop's ever going to read your book anyway, so it's not like they'll notice.
Well spoken. You're speaking for all of us.
Yeah.
Let's have a julep.
44-year-old actor Benicio Del Toro is expecting a baby with Kimberly Stewart, who is the daughter of rocker Rod Stewart. The pair are not a couple, but a source said to People that Del Toro is supportive, and both are very excited about the impending arrival. Stewart is 31.
Listener Keelan, by the way, would like to know that he's glad to be part of a long-standing member of a rape culture. So we'll get you a T-shirt, sir.
Yeah. Playboy creator Hugh Hefner told People that his former girlfriend Holly Madison will not be attending his June 18th wedding to Crystal Harris. I think Holly has expressed publicly that it would be a little strange if she was there, and I respect that, said Hefner during the 85th birthday party at Las Vegas's Palms Casino Resort. Apparently, living with him and three other women in a giant mansion is not strange, but going to his wedding would be odd.
Now, for some reason, I think because for some reason, when you started the story, I thought you were talking about somebody else. So this is Hefner, and who is expressing? Who's not going to be there?
Holly Madison, one of the girls, when he was making The Girls Next Door, one of the three girlfriends.
I wonder if, what's her name, if Kimberly Conrad Hefner, whose last wife, is going to be there.
I don't know. Right.
So this is why, because he's 85. In fact, he just had his birthday, I think.
Yeah, that's it. He said this during
He just turned 85. Yeah, so he's getting married when?
June 18th.
Has that biography or that autobiography of his ever come out? That's one of those things.
I don't think so.
It's been in the works like forever, like for 15 years, because Ed Norton has been attached for the longest time. Ed Norton apparently, I guess, has optioned the rights. When Hefner got a publishing deal to do his autobiography, Ed Norton optioned the rights to play Hugh Hefner, which is awesome. And but I mean, the book has just been in the works like forever and ever and ever. And so, I mean, that is one of those things where it's like, Hefner's lived a long life, and you know what? If he died today, he could still say, like, hey, I had a better life than, whatever. And I lived while I was alive and so forth. But he drunk deep from the flagon of existence. But I don't want him to die until he finishes his autobiography. That would just be the unkindest cut of all. It's like one of the great things for which I am grateful in this life, one of the small moments of time which the universe smiled on all of us, is that when that minivan came by and just pasted Stephen King into small little bits, that he survived and was able to write about it. Because how unfair would it have been if Stephen King had been run down in some horrible way and had lingered and then had died before being able to? Because that's exactly he is exactly the perfect guy to write to you about what it is like to be the victim of some horrible violent incident and to go through like this huge, traumatic, painful, bloody, disgusting upheaval. And then to come out the other side, like, who better than Stephen King to do that with the right mix of horror and pithy comedy? I was so glad that the universe allowed him to sort of, the fate allowed him to live and to just sort of write about that. To an almost absurd degree, I am grateful for that, because there's probably no one better in contemporary fiction to write about a near death experience like that. So, and the same thing with Hefner.
Although somebody should have stopped him from writing Dreamcatcher while he was still all hopped up on painkillers.
That notwithstanding, it's like with Hefner, it's like, I don't want to hear somebody else's version of Hefner's life. I want to hear Hefner tell what it was like. Because that is a situation where he is the only person at the center of that sort of cultural maelstrom who can to describe it. So I just hope he gets that thing done before he keels over. I mean, it's probably hard to tell yourself away from just mountains of blondes and, cash all the time to sit at a Smith Corona. But, I mean, you got to do those things for us, for the people.
Exactly.
I'm just saying.
He owes us. We gave him this life.
Really? No, that's true.
All he owes us is just sort of a recounting of how much fun it was to enjoy the
spoils. He should just have a book called, It's Awesome to Be Me, and then just to, I mean, I saw this great, there's a great photo gallery that I think Time Magazine put up, and it was a bunch of sort of, private, never-before-seen photographs of just taken, by Hefner and just some of his confidants and girlfriends, whatever, of the years, from, 63 to, 80. And I mean, and the thing about Hefner is it's like, as a guy, he's one of those guys that it's like, it would be, by all rights, we ought to just hate him. Other guys should just loathe Hefner somehow. The way that we often loathe people who just, are in a situation that seems very, that seems very desirable, or, the person who, is in living the way that we would like to live or whatever. But there's just something about the guy that just is inherently unloathable for most people and for most men, certainly.
You just mostly, I think, look at him as he's like that your dad's brother who gave you your first beer and let you look at girly magazines.
Totally. I really, yeah. But you just see these photographs from him all the way through the 60s and the 70s, and it's like no matter where he is, he's like on a plane, or he's like, you just did that great scene where he's on the round bed with the typewriter and the Pepsi bottle and the whatever, or, just surrounded by like 75 blonde girls, and he always just had that his look on his face like, it's all working out exactly as I planned, and it's fantastic. So let's do one
now
more.
Now to go pet my giraffe. Well, because he had his all the animals and the things.
Oh, okay.
Stuff.
I thought.
No, that wasn't a euphemism. Okay. McMinnville, Oregon police, this is not entertainment, but without. McMinnville, Oregon police say the Audubon Society is caring for an injured bald eagle found in some brush. The Audubon Society's Deb Schaefer says the bird appears to be about a 6-year-old female with an injured shoulder. She's being treated with antibiotics and supportive care and evaluated day by day. Local residents found the eagle on Saturday.
She'll be awake and joking with physicians any moment now.
And then swooping down and taking away people's dogs.
On that note, we do this, which is to bring a conclusion to this episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. Don't forget, next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program will plague and or bless your ears with our brand of knowledge and infotainment. It's coming up next hour featuring Penis Watch, Corpse Watch, Snuff Watch, and a recap of last night's episode of House, and so forth. That is at rickemersonshow.com. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agnew, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. And don't forget, you can get this program as a direct MP3 download here at cascadia.fm or legionofnews.com. And Ron, you have a safe and satisfying Tuesday. We will see you again tomorrow. That is Wednesday at noon for another episode of Legion of News. Good day to you. I said good day to you, sir!